And I put up a quick prayer and said, Lord, may I be able to speak sympathetically to the audience. I didn't know what to expect here. And almost instantly, these two sentences came right into my brain. The love of God is one of the most powerful forces, if not the most powerful force in the universe. And a love for God is almost as powerful. And my wish for you all is that that second, that love for God, is developing in all your hearts and becomes something that is there with you 24 hours a day. I don't like talking about myself, and for the reason that I've been a salesman since 1975, and on sales school they taught you never to use the word I and only to use the word you. Never talk about yourself because nobody's interested, but always talk about the person you're with because they're much more interested in themselves than they are interested in you. So here you've asked me to talk about myself, and I'm worried it's going to be dreadfully boring for you. I hope not, because really I want to talk about God. I will accept the challenge and talk about some of my history. And if there's anything interesting, then that'll be great. Tim already revealed certain things about my Christian walk, so maybe I can go through that a little bit more quickly. At the age of five, I was in a Catholic school. I'm not a Catholic. I was born in England. I'm an Anglican. But in that little school, they taught me about God the Father, God the Son, God the Holy Ghost. And they also taught me about hell and heaven. I'm talking about age of five now. And I would totally believe that if I were to do something wrong, I was going to burn in hell. So I never did anything wrong. I would never lie or anything, because hell sounded awful to me. And that guided me for quite a while. And I knew about God the Father and Jesus at that age, and that sort of kept me going for the early part of my life. I don't regret that for one second, by the way. I think it was really good that I learned about those things at that age. And today there's a kind of a trend, we don't talk about the fires of hell or whatever. Well, I think we probably should. We should understand that there's a major difference there between heaven and hell. So you might have thought I was set for life, but unfortunately, by about the age of 20, when I was, I'd been in university for a year or so, and I decided that all this stuff about religion was total hokey. I didn't believe, I switched completely to another kind of thinking where unless you can see it, it doesn't exist. So any kind of spirituality, religion, God, was for me totally ridiculous. And I thought people who believed in it were crazy. I really did. What a switch, eh? So that stayed with me for about between 15 and 20 years. Now, I didn't go around preaching atheism as people do today. I was perfectly happy for other people to have their beliefs, but I was totally convinced that I didn't need help from anybody. I had to get the help from inside myself and so on. So I'm telling you that so you know where I came from. I got married the first time at age 24 to Penny, and we had two children. And Penny was the one, in a way, that brought me back, because she was a churchgoer. She was into other things as well, still is. But I was therefore living with somebody who was a believer, and she didn't push me too hard. But over the course of, by the time I was about 35, things started to happen that were making me say, just a minute, maybe I've been wrong all this time. Maybe there is something in this, and maybe there is God. And my goodness, if there is, and I'm not aware of it, this could be a real big problem for me. And a number of things happened, but it culminated. I started running a Sunday school for teenage girls, the most difficult job I ever did in my life. Teenage girls, and I was teaching them about religion, and I was only just recently come back from that. It ground me down teaching these kids, and I've never done it ever since. So I have a great respect for anybody who teaches Sunday school to teenage girls. girls. But I was coming back into a church environment. And on the 19th of June, 1984, I went to a mass evangelism rally in London with the Argentinian evangelist Luis Palau. Now, I'd been to a Billy Graham mission in Norwich 6 months earlier, and when they came, I by then thought, because I was going to church on Sundays, I was a fully fledged Christian. So when Billy Graham made the invitation, come down on the pitch and pray, let's pray with you, I, of course, didn't do that because I was a Christian. Why would I? All these atheists can go and do that, not me. Well, actually, the real reason, I was far too scared to get out of my chair and walk down there. So I didn't. But 6 months later, on the Queen's Park Rangers soccer pitch, I did exactly that. And I had a profound experience. I was prayed for by some people. And I went back and listened to Luis another seven times and heard his message. The thing that really I appreciated about him, it was totally non-emotional. I'm an engineer. He was speaking like an engineer speaking to engineers. He basically proved the existence of God. He did to my satisfaction. And it profoundly affected my thinking from a logical point of view. I tend to be somebody who's much more interested in a logical, almost a lawyer-type argument than a lot of emotion and so on. Although I know there are people who far prefer an emotional approach to our faith than a more legalistic one. But I'm in the first bracket, and Luis convinced me. So all I wanted to do after that was join a home group. So I searched around, where can I find a home group? And probably you've had the experience, you're trying to bring people into your home group. I desperately wanted to be in a home group. So I phoned the organizers, and they put me on to a particular group in London. And I was living in Norfolk at the time, in Norwich, and I joined a group there. And these people who in these groups had quite a profound effect on me as well, because I saw this is something I can do every day, and I can make good friends with these people, and they can guide me, and we're in this together. I didn't want to be on my own in this walk of faith. At age 56, by when I had emigrated to Canada, why did I come? Love. There are two reasons people move from one continent to another, either love or economic hardship. Mine was I'd fallen in love with somebody, and my first marriage had ended. So I came over here and in 1987, and about, I think I was 56, I'm trying to figure out when that would be, about 1997, somebody dragged me, kicking and screaming, to an Alpha course. I didn't know what an Alpha course was. I thought maybe it was some cult. I had no idea, but they said there was a roast beef dinner the first night, and I like roast beef. So after he'd asked me five times, this is my friend Bob Horsey, some of you may possibly know Bob, I said, okay, I'll come along. And they said this guy called Nicky Gumbel is going to speak. Well, I assumed he was going to be there in person. Anybody here not know who Nicky Gumbel is? Okay, most of you do. So I was actually rather disappointed when I found out that Nicky wasn't there. He was just on video. So, all right, maybe this isn't for me. And then the video started. And after 10 minutes of that introductory video on the Alpha course by Nikki, I was totally hooked. I got out my calendar and crossed off every Wednesday night for the next 13 weeks. And I did Alpha, and some people sort of just sit there, and some people fill stuff in notes. By the time I'd finished, I had this thick of notes that I'd taken, all written out, and took them home. I was so enthusiastic. I remember going back to Glen Canyon United Church in the middle of the course. I'd just done the Alpha weekend, which is a powerful experience. That's when you can, basically, you're born again. Never happened to me before that point. Although I'd been, as I considered, a Christian since 1984. But this ladder sort of starts there, and it never gets. You're always looking back. Wow, I didn't know much then. And I remember standing up in the lectern at Glen Cairn and telling everybody, "This is incredible. You've got to come on the Alpha course." I was so enthusiastic at that time because that was how the Lord had touched me. At age 60, I was asked if I would become an Alpha advisor in Ottawa. Sally Stark was running Alpha at those times. I remember she was sitting in my kitchen, and she said, you're the kind of guy that we'd like to have in Ottawa sort of supervising and so on. So we had an Alpha conference coming up in 2001, and I got involved in that. It was one of these big events. It was held, I think, at Dominion Chalmers Church, and I sort of coordinated things. Since then, I've run several Alpha conferences here in Ottawa. Alpha conferences train people to run Alpha courses. Nowadays, I'm still running Alpha in Ottawa Carlton Detention Centre. We just go on, I've run it about 50 times so far. As soon as you finish, you start another one with inmates there. It's incredibly rewarding, and you get addicted to it, frankly. We're working with a bunch of addicts, of course, but I'm addicted to the fact that they are so enthusiastic. We've had about 170 baptisms in a big tub we have in Ottawa County Detention Centre in the last 4 years. There's a big revival going on there. There's a lot of very strong Christians inside that jail. And what we're trying to do is two things. Help bring the ones to the Lord who aren't with him already, and also try and stop them on this eternal cycle of coming into the jail, going out, coming back, this recidivism thing. And we've been successful with some of these people. Once they realize some of the facts of life, and once they have Jesus in their hearts, they have a chance of getting out of jail or staying out of jail. If I had been brought up in the environment that many of those men were brought up in, I would absolutely definitely be in that jail. So it's how you're brought up. Something like 80% of violent offenders were sexually abused when they were children, usually by their parents or close relatives. Just please have compassion for people who are in jail. And remember, in this jail here, some of the people are totally innocent. It's a holding place until they go to trial. And they're all living with some pretty nasty characters as well. So that's kind of like how I came to the Lord. And I like to think that he's been closely in my heart ever since. One thing that... trying to read my writing here. The thing that I felt most, I suppose, at the end of all that was evangelism. I feel, as I think you said so eloquently, sir, that we are here to bring faith to people. And if we're not doing that, well, what are we doing? Why are we here? Probably time to turn it in. But I am not a good one-on-one evangelist. Unless somebody comes up to me and actually says, would you tell me a little bit about Jesus Christ? That's fine. But just turning around, talking to somebody on the bus or in the elevator and starting the conversation, I can do it, but I don't feel very comfortable about it. And, you know, maybe you feel a little bit the same. So I tended to move to getting involved in things like Alpha, where we had the capability for doing evangelism on a group basis. If everything worked well, people would come to the Lord, even though I wasn't actually having to do it myself. Anyone sort of relate to what I'm saying here? So I was a little bit chicken about that, and I still am. It's not one of my strengths. Is actually one-on-one evangelism. I'm not the kind of guy who, in a pub like this, I could suddenly stand up, say to everybody, "Okay, be quiet for a couple of seconds. I want to talk to you about Jesus." Now, my friend George Sinclair, who's the senior pastor at Church of the Messiah, will do that kind of thing, but I don't have that capability. So I thought, Alpha is a great launching platform. It's something where I've got my passion, and I can do a little teaching. And I was training people how to be Alpha leaders. As people started asking me if I would get involved in other things. Now, it's a slippery slope, because if you're involved in too many things, you can't give enough to any individual one. And I am guilty, folks. I stand here convicted of the fact that I'm involved in too many things, and I'll tell you about some of them. But in every case, it's been a great joy for me. It's never been boring. My definition of happiness is when I go to bed at night, did I have a good day? And just about most days, I can say, yes, I did. I'm not really interested in other types of happiness, but I'm extremely interested in not being bored. So I had, by now, and we're talking about 19, let me see, I was in Canada. I'd worked in the computer industry for quite a few years, and then I got laid off. And in 1993, On my birthday that year, I joined. I'd been out of work for 9 months. I'd been an engineer, and my wife said to me, "Well, look, you've been your money has been looked after by your investors group. Why don't you ask them for a job?" So I did. I think my bank balance was at zero at the time. My car was pretty rickety. And I called my planner, Steve Goebel, and I said, "Steve, I've had some experience in this industry. I used to sell insurance for a while when I was in England. Any chance of coming and working for your company?" He said, "Oh, come and see me on Monday." Well, I did, and a week later I was working for the company. Because he knew all about me. He was my financial planner. He didn't even ask me for a resume, and he knew that I had certain sales skills and everything else. So that's just how I got into the financial services industry. And I've been there ever since. I've worked for that company now for 21 years. And it's been a total joy. But what I think of myself as is a Christian financial planner. That doesn't mean to say that I only give financial planning advice to Christians, but in the advice that I give, I base it on the Bible. There's an awful lot about money in the Bible, as you probably know. I think it's the number one subject that's discussed. Maybe healing and money come pretty close. And there's a lot of books out there, like The Richest Man in Babylon, which is sort of the financial planning Bible, which are stories based around 2,000 years ago, and they use biblical concepts all over the place to teach financial planning. You know, the story of the 7 years of famine and the 7 years of plenty and everything the other way around, pure biblical stuff. So there's a good fit between helping people with their finances and Christianity. And sometimes I've even got to the point where I've jumped in and we've had a good Christian discussion with when we finished having our financial discussion with certain people. So now I have quite a lot of Christian clients, and one will introduce me to another and so on. And that has been a real joy for me in my professional life. I'm planning to retire on the 15th of February 2016. I'm just planning my retirement party, but... So that'll lead to a new phase of my life. Other things that I sort of found myself doing, and I was asked to say, how does Jesus work in your life now that you are a Christian? Fairly early on, when I was at Glen Cairn United Church, they had a team that worked with the Kanata Food Cupboard. It's just like the food bank, we've always called it the Kanata Food Cupboard. And I decided to start volunteering there. And I've been doing that ever since. And I've stayed with the group from Glen Cairn United Church just to stay in touch, even though I've long since left that particular congregation. And why do I do that? Well, you'd think that Kanata was a pretty affluent area. But there's plenty of people in Kanata who haven't got any bread on their table, and they have to turn to the food cupboard. And we help thousands of people over time. So I'm one of the people that actually takes the food and drives it to the people who need it. And sometimes this kind of thing happens. There's two SUVs in the driveway, and I'm bringing enough food for the next month. Hey, what's with the cars, folks? Well, you're very careful about what you say, but in that particular case, I did make some quiet inquiries. And this, you know, how come you couldn't use one of your cars to come and pick it up to save me bringing it? Oh, the cars don't work. And we ran out of gas 6 months ago. We lost our jobs. There's no way we can sell them. We owe much more on the cars than they're worth. That kind of situation. So people will do very well in a high-tech environment. They're earning $150,000 a year, and suddenly they get laid off, and the total world breaks. Because they never read that story about Joseph in the Old Testament. You know, they weren't saving up. It's the same thing with sports stars. They earn millions, and then they spend it all on stuff. That's one of the reasons I'm a financial planner, to try and stop people doing that sort of thing. So, it was about 8 years ago, we heard about the Global Day of Prayer, which started in South Africa in the year 2000, and a bunch of us, Fred Milnes, some of you may know him, asked me if I would join him on a team, and we've been running the Global Day of Prayer in Ottawa ever since. We do this once a year on Pentecost Sunday. The last 3 years, we've actually done it on Parliament Hill, and I do recommend you come along. I run the website and try and do the publicity for it, and that's been a great thing. Why? Because of this passion that I have for not just my faith here in my local church, but I feel very much a connection with Christians in different countries. I'm and all around the world. I think some of us just get in little silos, and yet there are Christians in every part of the world, and if you ever meet with them, it's the same feeling. It's the same feeling with a bunch of Christians here as it is in Sierra Leone or anywhere else. We are held together by this powerful force of our belief in Jesus Christ. And it doesn't matter what language they speak. It's incredibly consistent how that is. So I've loved the Global Day of Prayer. More recently, I've become in a significant involvement in Good News Christian Ministries. Anybody ever heard of that? Ever heard of Good News in the Morning on CFRA at 6:30 every Sunday morning? Anybody listen to it? Thank you. That was started by Alan Churchill immediately after the Billy Graham campaign in 1998. It's been running ever since, never stopped. And nowadays, Alan is retired from that, but we have four local pastors here who preach a wonderful message with a little bit of music every Sunday morning. I know 6:30 is a little early to get up. I always listen to it live, but I stick up on the website, everything. You can listen to the programs the last 5 years online if you want to. So I'm now the chairman of that organization. It's very close to my heart. We're having an event on 14th of November, and we have John Council coming as our speaker. Anyone heard John Council speak? Well, he's on radio five nights a week, so where have you been if you haven't heard of him? Particularly on Wednesday nights with Ask the Pastor. And he's emceeing the Dig and Delve conference, but he's coming across still to give a talk to us right in the middle, so he's going to nip between the two. So John's a friend of mine, and I've been on his show for a couple of times and so on. So a great person, and I'd invite all of you to come out to that event. It's a noon until 2 on the 14th at St. Timothy's Church on Alta Vista, Presbyterian Church. So you should feel at home there. So that's probably my main ministry at the moment. Last night and tonight, I will be at the annual convention of the International Pastors and Leaders Fellowship. We try and encourage pastors who have set up churches here in pagan Canada. They're bringing the gospel from Africa to us here, and I'm the treasurer of that organization. I love the worship from our African friends, and what we're trying to do is to get more and more nations involved in this. We have the Filipinos are on side. Jesus is Lord Church here in Ottawa. Go there if you want to experience really true worship. So now we've got Africans working closely with Filipinos. They're on the board from both. We want lots of churches to come and join this organization. And it's not, if you're a Canadian church, you're not excluded. But that's a kind of activity that I find very, very rewarding indeed. And I got a lot of friends amongst pastors in the black community. These people have a true love for the Lord, and they express it so well, and they're enthusiastic. Sometimes they shout a little loud on their microphones, and they need to learn a little microphone technique, which I'm capable of teaching them, but there you are. The internet has been, as Gord was saying, has been totally part of my life since I first figured out what on earth the World Wide Web was and how we can communicate with it. So anything I do, I immediately put up a web page for it, so I've got information there. It's my personal diary. I run a website for Kannada. Anything that happens in Kannada, political or otherwise, I post it up there. Other people do this by their own personal stuff. I stick it up there. If it's useful to me, great, because I refer to it all the time myself. But if it's helpful to other people, then that's good. If you want to find my stuff, just type Tony Koppel into Google, and I'm all over the place, which means I have a high risk of being murdered, folks. It's a bit like John Lennon, you know? The more stuff you've got out there, the more chance you'll get shot one day. But I'm ready. I'm ready to go. I want to be with Jesus. No particular reason not to delay that. I've got pages up there on my faith page. Everything I've said today is all up on the net. I need to bring it up to date, but all the early stuff is up there. I have pages on evangelism. I do a site for revival in Ottawa. Anything that I'm involved in or that I hear about, I will post up in there, because I think there is a potential revival going on here in Ottawa. I do a site on Christian events coming up. I do a site on activism, which covers abortion in some depth. I'm kind of like anti-abortion, in case you hadn't thought I might not be. I'm kind of like one man, one woman marriage, although that's now getting politically incorrect to say that, but I'm afraid I still believe in it. I'm not against gay or lesbians, and I'm certainly not against transgender people. I have a lot of sympathy with, and I know several transgender people. I see them in a totally different category from homosexual. I do believe that only marriage should be between a man and a woman, and particularly if one of those people is a bishop. So I'm sort of laying myself open there. I love radio. I love listening to radio. I don't listen to much TV. I don't go out very much, so that's why I have a lot of spare time for doing all these things. So no, zero time spent on TV gives you a huge amount of time for doing other things. I do watch the news, but that's about it. And I watch Borgen on TVO on Sunday nights. Ha, that's one my one exception. So I'm a volunteer at CKCU. CKCU is Ottawa's community radio station, been running nearly 40 years. We turned on the transmitters 40 years ago, and they never turned off. And there's a live person in the studio 24/7. I'm going straight from here to CKCU when I'm on the phone lines for their funding drive, which is going on at the moment. We're trying to raise $135,000 to keep us on air for the next year. I have two or three programs on CKCU. And the one I wanted to mention to you is on Sunday mornings. It's called Over My Head, where we play music by Christian artists. But I'm very privileged this Sunday, since it's funding drive, to have Bob DeBroy coming as my guest. Anyone ever heard of Bob DeBroy? Anyone heard of CHRI? Right, he founded CHRI. He's the guy. What was he doing before he founded CHRI? He was on CKCU on this program that I'm talking about. And they thought, wouldn't it be a good idea to have a Christian radio show here in a radio station in Ottawa? People said yes. So they decided to go and do CHRI, and Over My Head decided to be a little heavier. So we'll play the heavier end of Christian contemporary music. You know, some of it's pretty wild stuff, but we also play gentle stuff and so on. Ruth Fadal. Tune in at 8 o'clock every Sunday morning, 93.1. If you do that tomorrow, you'll hear me talking to Bob DeBroy, and I'm sure it's going to be an interesting historical program. And you can even phone in a pledge and help us keep us on the air. We'd love you to do that. And I need the credibility. I need to have people who are actually pledging to our show so that I can keep the show on the air. My wife is a total partner in all these things, Lorianne. She is an art. She actually became a host on CKCU before I did, and then she trained me up. So we also do a Friday afternoon show called Window of Opportunity. And 2 weeks ago, or just over a week ago, I had Tony Turner as my guest on that, the man who wrote the Harper Man song. I didn't, but you bet I will go and look for it.
He wrote this song called the Silverlight Song.
Yes, wonderful song. We talked about it. Yes. Tony is an Ottawa icon in the folk world, and I've known him for 15 years. So it was a great reunion. He's a lovely man. He's a scientist, too, so you'd relate to him, John.
He's the guy that wrote Harper Man.
Yes. at the time when the Anglican Church was having its problems, we didn't want to see gays and lesbians marrying one another and that sort of thing. I was very much on the more, shall we say, the more traditional side. And the Anglican Network in Canada was launched. I was one of the first signatories to that. I set up a website called the Anglican Gathering of Ottawa, and it was a place for us to document all the stuff that was happening at that time. That organization is defunct now, but the website still exists, and I'm still running that particular website. I'm a worship leader in my church, which is Blackburn Hamlet Community Church, which is one of the five ANIC churches here in this area, Anglican Network in Canada. And I'm almost ashamed that they pay me to do this job. I get paid for playing the guitar. Have you ever? Do you get paid for playing the guitar? Because I love doing it so much, but and if you're doing it every week, you gradually get better. about on a beta course, which is something that comes after alpha, about 5 years ago, somebody made the suggestion that a good way of doing daily devotions would be to read an Old Testament chapter and a New Testament chapter each day, and to pick out the verses or the sentences and the phrases that really hit you, that really sort of say, wow, yeah, I see the meaning in that. So I decided to put this up online. So my daily devotions page now has, I'm working through the Bible. I haven't got through it yet. Just do one chapter from the old one to the new. Most days I do it. If I'm really busy, I'm afraid I skip it. So that's a little exercise. That's how I do my daily devotions in the morning. I have I extract stuff from the chapter I'm on the Old Testament, which at the moment, my goodness, my brain has suddenly gone soft. And then the New Testament, which is Matthew, I'm working through. And then I put a little prayer. And some of my prayers are very immediate. They're for people that I know, and some of them are more general. So that's the way I do my daily devotions. We've run Alpha in various places, retirement home, prisons, pubs, and so on. And Chinese churches are very keen on Alpha. I trained up a number of the Chinese churches here in Ottawa, and I have a number of friends in the Chinese church community here. Again, other wonderful Christians. You see, trying to read my writing here.